We'll pick up the countdown shortly here. In H-minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
So first up, I have to apologize for the dead air last week. Somehow I had gotten into my head that I was going to be able to do a live show from the Dallas Makerspace while presenting the Nuclear Science Day event there. This was a miscalculation on my part. I was too busy talking to people. Now, I'd like to say that I was too busy talking to people because of all the eager people who showed up for the Nuclear Science Day event. In practice, it's a little more complicated than that because I was in the front lobby at the Makerspace, so people coming in and out were all passing by me, but quite a number of them stopped to talk and look at the exhibit.
There are two other parties in this conference.
Hello? I don't know what that was about. That was odd. Anyway, so the big number of people who were actually there were people coming for some kind of retro computing event. And I was a bit sorry that it conflicted with the Nuclear Science Day event, because if it hadn't, I might have brought I've got this Mac 128 that belonged to my late grandfather, which Mom says she wants me to sell, you know, for the benefit of the estate. Anyway, it's got all the accessories and things, so I need to find a retro computing meetup where there might be somebody to buy it. But that's irrelevant. What is relevant? Well, as I say, several of the people who were there for the retro computing event did stop to talk. Several of them had actually come up from Austin. And one person in particular described how he had spent the summer, sometime around 1980, working for Viscount Ilya Prigozhin, who was at the University of Texas in Austin at that time, studying tokamak noise. So it's funny, you will not find either of them listed on the Wikipedia page about tokamaks, but where there's what's supposed to be an extensive list of tokamaks. But the University of Texas did have, in downtown Austin, a tokamak from the late 1960s to the early 1990s. First, the original Texas tokamak, also known as the Texas Turbulent Taurus. And then after that, the Texas Experimental Tokamak, also known as TEXT. I think this person must have been working on the second one. The first one was taken out in the late 70s to be replaced with the second one. Anyway, the topic of the research was tokamak noise, which is a particular phenomenon which occurs in this type of reactor. And Prigozhin thought that by taking very high-speed photographs, the person I was talking to described how they used explosive bolts to open and close the shutters over the quartz portholes in the reactor in order to get very fast exposures on the film and not have a lot of like radiation leakage and so on from the reactor. The idea was to study this in the hopes of obtaining information that would allow building a mathematical model of this particular kind of plasma instability. So, unfortunately, apparently, between the film grain and other things, they just couldn't get enough good quality data to develop a mathematical model of the phenomenon. But it was apparently quite an interesting piece of research anyway. interesting way to spend a summer, you know, getting your fellowship money. So that's basically what I have to report from the Nuclear Science Day at DMS. Now, I'm going to upload a substitute show. Now, obviously, you won't normally hear it unless there's a repeat for some reason. But I am going to upload a substitute show, and I will put a link to that substitute show on the Step Farther Out page on the AnonRadio.net website. So if you go to the AnonRadio.net website, there is a page for a Step Farther Out. And that has a list of not only the regular Saturday shows, but also the call-in live reading shows that I have done some of in the last couple of months in Tuesdays and Fridays time slot, which is normally for my other show, Hear Now the Words. Yesterday, I actually went and did some archive maintenance because some of those live call-ins, for whatever reason, the archive bot did not cut off at the end of the hour or something, with the result that in addition to the hour of me talking, there was also a bunch of extra stuff on the end, which was, you know, your Anon Radio auto DJ and that kind of thing, which doesn't really belong with it. So I uploaded new versions of those archive files, and I believe that the archives have been updated. Now, what is that substitute show going to be about? What's the topic that I am going to, that you will hear about if you listen to the substitute show? Well, the answer is research reactors. After all, my previous show, I was talking enthusiastically about my visit to the research reactor at Garching, north of Munich. And so I thought I would take some time to just talk about research reactors, because research reactors are a really fascinating topic. The very, very short form of the substitute show, the content of the substitute show, is this. There are three broad categories of nuclear fission chain reactors: research reactors, production reactors, and power reactors. Production reactors are very much alike. Power reactors are largely alike because they all have the same purpose, even if they get there by somewhat different ways. Research reactors are immensely diverse because they have lots of different purposes. So that's the short form. And so if you want to listen to a half hour of me talking about the different kinds of research reactors, what their purposes are, how they get there, then that will be an opportunity for that. Anyway, but now moving on to the current events portion of our show today. Now, a portion of what I'm going to talk about comes out of the Wall Street Journal. I detest the Wall Street Journal. I can't stand it. But that's largely because of its editorial viewpoint and the way that the people who write for the Wall Street Journal think about the world. I find it disturbing in the extreme. But there's often useful information in it. So I do glance at it from time to time, and when I do, I often find something of interest. It's just hard to cope with, even worse than conventional newspapers. I just find a lot of people who write for newspapers, I mean other media outlets similarly, have very little sense of perspective. I guess that's the best way of describing it. Anyway, but as you may have heard by now, it looks like Germany for the next few years is very likely to be governed by a coalition of the SPD, the Greens, and the FDP. Now, these are not three parties that are really comfortable together. SPD is center-left. The Greens are the Greens. The FDP is sort of a pro-business party. As I mentioned a couple of weeks back about my visit to Augsburg, the FDP at their campaign stands was handing out disposable, that is to say, non-refillable, single-use butane lighters made out of plastic. So you get the impression that they're pretty much the opposite of the Greens. So how they're going to be coalition partners, I'm not clear on. But that's the wacky world of politics. Now, the SPD is generally referred to as a center-left party. For a long time, one of the major differences between the SPD and the CSU-CDU, which you get, whether you get CSU or CDU is different depending on whether you're in Bavaria or the rest of Germany, but they work together as a single entity for most purposes. A main difference between the SPD, which is supposed to be center-left, and the CSU-CDU, which is supposed to be center-right, is that the SPD was the party with the anti-nuclear position. Originally, it appears that a major reason for this was that they were promoting domestic coal as an energy source to create jobs, which is really a misunderstanding of the function of energy supply in the economy. The fact is, energy is the thing that makes other kinds of economic activity, this actual useful stuff, possible. Creating jobs in energy is not a good idea. The less of your economic activity devoted to energy supply, the same as with basic agriculture, the less of your economic activity which is devoted to it, the more people have a chance to do something with their lives. You know, the only reason that, you know, Texas, you know, jobs in the oil patch are a big deal generally because they're well paid, not because there's something specially good about them. And so saying, oh, well, we're going to retrain all those people as solar panel installers. Well, solar panel installers, by the very nature of the thing, aren't well paid. So, you know, using wind and solar means that you have to devote a large portion of your economic activity to just providing the energy supply, which is basic for all other forms of economic activity. It becomes kind of a self-eating pancake pretty rapidly. So as I say, I think that the idea of domestic coal as a way to create jobs is a fundamental misunderstanding of the role of energy supply in the economy, and that has carried on into the renewable energy conversation. Basic misunderstanding. The Greens, of course, are just anti-nuclear, period. That's the one position they're not willing to give up. The FDP, nominally pro-nuclear these days, in the past anti-nuclear again on the same basis as the SPD, basically creating domestic jobs. The SPD's opposition to nuclear energy, I think, also probably had something to do with their desire for rapprochement with the Soviet Union. Again, this point I keep making that in very few countries, maybe only Sweden, has there ever been an open public debate about nuclear weapons. And so, absent that, in West Germany, where the NATO, basically the U.S., was deploying nuclear weapons, East Germany, where the Soviet Union was deploying nuclear weapons, nobody had a say about that, right? There was no open political debate about that. And so people's feelings about this nuclear weapons that they were not able to have a public debate about got in some degree transferred, I think, to nuclear power, which was the subject of public debate. And so the SPD was more interested in rapprochement with the Soviets, and the CSU-CDU was more interested in confrontation with the Soviets. And so that carried forward into their attitudes about nuclear energy for civil purposes, I think. It's a difficult thing to be sure of, but, you know, I look at cases. I look, for example, Helen Caldicott, one of the prophets of the anti-nuclear movement, who is notorious for saying a bunch of things that make no sense whatsoever. For example, that it's more environmentally friendly to read by candlelight than by electric light. Or that nobody ever needs air conditioning because you can't die of heat stroke. The woman was a medical doctor educated in Australia. People die of heat stroke all the time in Australia. She's also claimed that two-thirds of all cancers are caused by man-made radiation and the remaining third by artificial by natural radiation, which, again, makes no sense, and nobody in the field of oncology or cancer research would believe that for a moment. But again, she was a pediatrician from Australia. She moved to Britain in the 70s. She became involved with a group called Physicians for Social Responsibility, which is nominally against nuclear war, but did a lot of anti-nuclear power campaigning. In particular, she was in the forefront of a campaign to convince the British government, basically saying, don't build new nuclear ballistic missile submarines. Use that money on the